One of the definitive aspects of our Christian faith that defines who we are, that really gives direction and form to what it means to be Christian, is certainly the incarnation of the eternal Word. It's one of the two central events of our faith that make our faith what it is. The second event, of course, is the Paschal mystery, the death and resurrection of Jesus. But without the incarnation, that wouldn't have even been possible. The incarnation, God become man, Emmanuel, God is with us. This is a scandalous claim for many, especially for the Jews and the Muslims. And I think it would be good for us to take a moment to take their shock and dismay at our article of faith seriously. Why is it a stumbling block? Why is it scandalous for them? Well, it seems to me that it's because they have a healthy understanding of the transcendence of God. God is one. God is all-powerful, all-knowing, all-good. And we don't mean that. We don't mean that in the sense that God is simply stronger or smarter or better morally than everything else, right? It's not that he's just a bit above everything else. That's not what we mean at all when we speak of God. But rather in the sense that God is the origin of these categories. He's beyond even being defined by them in a certain sense. You know, the archangel Michael, the one who is pinning Satan down, right? What does his name mean? It means, who is like God? Right? His name mocks Satan, who pretends to even be like God, to even approach him in any way. Right? So God is transcendent. He's so far beyond our understanding and our categories. And I think this is the root, the heart of why it's so unbelievable to so many that God could become man. Now, we believe that we're made in God's image and likeness. We emphasize this point very often, as we should. It's a beautiful reality of our faith. But let's never forget that God is much more unlike us than he is like us. Okay? God is much more unlike us than he is like us. He transcends. He is so far beyond. He's not just a higher kind of being than us as humans. He is not, in fact, a being in the universe. Right? To conceive of God as such is not to conceive of the Christian God. God is that without which nothing could exist. The only one whose very existence is necessary. So my point is that the Christian claim that God became man is beyond imagining. It is a stumbling block, a scandal in the biblical sense of the word. It is something that should cause us an internal revolt. And yet, it happened. God became man in Jesus Christ. And this opens up to us a whole new world, an awe, a surprising reality of who God is and how we might relate to him. So Jesus is God become man in order to build this bridge between what is beyond and transcendent and our human and earthly reality. He came to build this bridge between us and God because we had lost our friendship with him and need to be reconciled with him. So how does Jesus do this? How does Jesus build this trust again? Build this bridge. I think this is what our letter to the Hebrews is all about today. The second reading. It's by his likeness with us that Jesus builds this bridge. So the letter to the Hebrews is speaking about the priesthood, the great high priest. And anyone would have known, of course, who was reading this in the first century, what the role of the high priest was. That the high priest was someone who was chosen from among men to enter into the sanctuary on behalf of the people to offer sacrifice to God. One who was like them would enter and offer it on their behalf. Of course, they would enter into the inner sanctuary through, they would pass through the curtain, right? The great curtain that divided the space that represented God's dwelling from the rest of the world. So here we read in the letter to the Hebrews, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Now, no longer do we have a high priest who passes through a curtain to get into God's presence, but rather one who has passed through the divider between the divine and the human. He has come from the other direction, if you would. He has come and passed through the heavens, Jesus. Yet he is a great high priest. And because of this, because of what Jesus has done, we are told to hold fast to our confession, hold fast to our faith, to what we believe. For we do not have a high priest, we're told, who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has similarly been tested in every way, yet without sin. Right, certainly, it wouldn't be surprising that the high priest, everyone knew, was just like them, was a human with weaknesses, and entered on their behalf. But now we have a high priest who's coming from the heavens. But it's because he has chosen to take on our likeness, because Jesus, though he is the Son of God, though he is God himself, because he has chosen to take on our human nature, its weaknesses, to experience temptation, it's because of that that we have confidence of entry into the presence of God. Because he is like us, he is able to sympathize with our weaknesses. Right? Think about that. God sympathizes with us. He doesn't just understand and remain from afar. He sympathizes with us. You could say even he empathizes with us. He feels with us what we go through and what we experience. He has taken on our suffering, our weakness, our pain. He is alongside us. He doesn't just pity us from above and from afar. He has come to be one with us. This is the kind of high priest that we have. One who has similarly been tested in every way. He gets what we go through. He's experienced it himself. And in the midst of it, he did not run away from it. And so neither should we. That's why we're told to hold fast. Now not only does he get it, not only does he sympathize, but he overcame. He conquered. He was without sin. Though he experienced the same weaknesses and temptations that you and I do, he remained without sin. He has shown his power over these things. And therefore, we're told, we can confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and to find grace for timely help. That word confidence is from the Latin cum fiducia, means with faith, right? So with faith, trusting in what Jesus has done for us, we can approach the Lord. And we know what to expect. We know what we will find when we come to him. Mercy and grace for timely help. I love that phrase, timely help, right? Often at the end of a parish event, when the cleanup is almost done, I'll go over and say, hey, can I help, right? Just when they don't need it anymore. But this is timely help, right? Just at the moment that we need it, the Lord is ready to provide grace. Because God became man, we know where to turn. We have confidence of entry. We know that God is with us in our suffering. But isn't it a scandal to think that God feels what I feel when I'm tempted? God is transcendent. God isn't subject to emotional states. Isn't that a crazy concept? Yet he did become man. He did take on our human nature to build this bridge between what is beyond, what is transcendent, and what is here and now. I want to add that just thinking of Jesus as the bridge, right? If you've ever studied any of the great military battles, bridges are always decisive places where battles are fought. There are points of contact. Now, this is the bridge. And so it's no wonder that the battle is here about the identity of Jesus, whether he is in fact true God and true man. It's always been the place of battle. It's always been the place of conflict. And so here in the letter to the Hebrews, the general is telling us, hold fast to this confession. This is the place to stand your ground. This is where we need to be. Because if we give up this point, if we lose this space, if we lose the reality that Jesus is truly God and truly man, the whole project of our Christian faith falls apart. And then if in our life we forget that Jesus is God, or we forget that he is truly human like us, then our whole project of faith will fall apart. So just briefly, a couple of practical implications of this, what we hear from the letter to the Hebrews. First, of course, is go to the throne of grace, to the confessional, frequently, humbly, confidently. You will receive mercy and grace for timely help, what you need. But the secondly, a practical implication of living on the bridge, living life with the God-man, is that we shouldn't dare tell Jesus what he should do for us, like James and John did in our gospel. Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. We don't tell the ground that we're standing on to move. Okay? And especially if we're standing on the bridge, we wouldn't tell it to move. Right? There's such an irony in that they say, teacher, master, learn from us what you ought to do. Obey us. So we should never have that attitude that James and John display for us. Rather, we come to him in humility. We come to him precisely in our weakness, because that's the point of contact between our lives and the life of the God-man. We don't have great virtue to connect us to him. We don't have great merit. What we have is weakness. And that's where he wants to prove his sympathy for us. And he may well say to us at that moment when we come to him in humility, you can indeed drink the cup that I will drink. But we'll know that it's not a result of our own merit or strength, but of the mercy and the timely help that we receive by approaching him confidently with faith and by holding firm to our confession that Jesus is Lord.